see trees of green, red roses too, I see them bloom.
Yellowstone National Park is America's premier park. Today, Yellowstone is often a byword for conservation, natural beauty, and a way for everyone to enjoy the great outdoors. But it was not always this way. The new book Wonder Landscape presents a new perspective on Yellowstone, the emotions that various natural wonders and attractions evoke, and how this explains the park's relationship to America as a whole. John Clayton is the author. He's an independent journalist, essayist, and historian based in Montana. Again, the name of his new book is Wonder Landscape, and we welcome John Clayton to the roundtable this morning. John, thank you very much for being with us.
Joe, thanks so much for having me.
Very nice to have you. At what point did you think of Yellowstone as not only a subject, but something different than a national park and more as a cultural icon?
I grew up back east. I've lived in Montana for 27 years. And when I would describe my new home to old friends and family, they would often be confused. They didn't really know much about Montana, certainly not about the tiny town where I lived. But when I said that I lived near Yellowstone Park, the reaction was always favorable, and they knew the park, they loved the park. Even if they hadn't been there, they wanted to go. They suddenly had a sense of what my life was like. And so I started asking, well, why? Why is it famous? And the answers led me in more of a cultural than an environmental direction.
How so? When did you get your first hint that it was headed in that cultural direction?
I think the big thing for me was realizing that the Hayden Expedition, 1871, the first explorers to really write things down and turn Yellowstone into a national park, they also talked about how they had brought hunters along to feed the 50 people on the expedition, and they couldn't find enough game. And people ended up having to eat biscuits and rabbit stew rather than the elk or bison that you would imagine first hunters in Yellowstone would have eaten. Now, it's not clear. They were probably bad hunters, maybe noisy, you know, lousy shots. The animals may have been there, but just hiding. But nevertheless, the reason that Yellowstone was established as a national park had everything to do with geology, nothing to do with animals, with the ecosystem for which we celebrate it today. That came 20 years later as the nation as a whole became concerned about the extinction of bison on the plains and many other species. And so Yellowstone, in its first 20 years, had really changed in its meaning because of changes in the wider culture. And that was when I started thinking, wow, I wonder how else it has changed.
So does Yellowstone get us thinking in this cultural way differently about all parks, or does it remain an outlier?
To me, it remains an outlier because Yellowstone is such a vast and complex landscape full of so many riches that every time the nation changes what we want out of a national park, we discover a previously underappreciated aspect of Yellowstone that can fulfill that need. Other parks may be able to do that, but I think not as wholly as Yellowstone, and that's why Yellowstone has been sort of the trademark national park for so long.
And you write about this in the book, but of course there's the geological aspect, and there is the wildlife aspect. There is a lot going on, and this emerges slowly over time, right? These various aspects.
Exactly, yeah. You know, the geological aspect was the first thing to really be appreciated, the unique collection of geysers in Yellowstone. But later, as I mentioned, the richness of the wildlife and the animal life came to be important. One of the fascinating stories for me was Yellowstone is often known as the first national park in the world, but it really didn't gain that status until after it had been a national park for 50 years. The National Park Service came along and wanted to establish a sort of creation story for national parks. And so it was those administrators who discovered and emphasized this story of people sitting around a campfire and saying, maybe we should set this land apart as a national park.
When I first went to Yellowstone, it fascinated me because it just seemed like a really good example of how pissed off the earth could get. There's things bubbling and brewing and steaming, and it's really remarkable. How has as we see climate change and we look at these environmental issues, how has the park been able to and not been able to reflect that?
Well, I mean, I want to put that challenge right back on you. When you saw anger in the earth, was that because the earth was literally angry or because that was a cultural expectation that you brought to those landscapes? I think many of the earliest explorers had seen the West and the wilderness as violent and forbidding. One of the interesting things about the painter Thomas Moran, who was on that 1871 expedition, was that he was able to paint the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone as a gentle and wondrous place rather than a scary one. And so I think people always bring their own expectations, their own fears, their own joys to Yellowstone. One of the fascinating examples currently is the fascination with Yellowstone as a supervolcano. It is indeed one of the largest volcanoes in the world. If it was to erupt, it would cause huge devastation over, we don't really know how big a scale. And yet it seems like the supervolcano is gaining attention now because the wider culture is interested in apocalyptic visions, whereas that wasn't as important, say, 100 years ago.
I found it interesting because I don't know that I came with any notion other than, I guess, cultural in the sense of the geysers, Old Faithful, and the wildlife aspect. I was genuinely surprised and did not know about many of the the bubbling pits in the earth that were there. And that surprised me. So that, I think, that formed my opinion. But I'm interested in how we look at that now as something as changing, or as, and you touched on this, but as an evolution or something that we are losing along the way.
I agree. It's changing because of the way we see it changing. And certainly climate change does pose potential threats to Yellowstone that I'm not sure we fully understand, but certainly in terms of the diversity and health of the wildlife, that will change. And yet I think it's also a cultural expectation of a national park that it should not change, that a city may grow and change because a city is part of human culture. A national park we expect to remain the same, to be able to show the same views to our kids or grandkids that our parents showed us. And yet that expectation is foolish. I mean, if nothing else, trees will grow and block certain views that we used to have. And so this was a huge issue during the 1988 forest fires. Ecologists say that forest fires are a natural system, and the natural system is not changing at all. But as we in the public looked at Yellowstone and what used to be a lush forest was now a black burnscape, we became concerned at that change. But the expectation of unchangingness is still our cultural expectation rather than a feature of the environment itself.
This is a bit of an aside, but I have to say I was really shocked. You include a preliminary survey of the burned areas from 1988 in the book, and how vast and how much of the park was affected really surprised me. That is really something.
Those maps were all over the media in 1988. I spent a week immersed in the magazine and newspaper coverage from that time, so that I could try to picture what the culture was was going through in terms of its view of Yellowstone. Later, ecologists were saying that those maps maybe were exaggerations, that some of those burned areas were only lightly burned, whereas others were thoroughly burned. But yes, it certainly felt to people in 1988 like the entire park was burning, was being destroyed. And I think we've seen with the rebound since that, first of all, the entire park was not burning. There were many wildlife habitats that allowed the wildlife populations to remain strong. And secondly, it is a natural process. It has rebounded since then. We see the forests growing back, and I think people are equally charmed by that.
So let me ask a question that'll probably sound more controversial or antagonistic than I mean it to be, but the responsibility on that story and creating our expectations and our cultural expectations, how much of that comes from the Park Service itself? Because it does seem that when you go there, there is a narrative, and that narrative often fits to what we come in with.
Certainly there is a narrative in Yellowstone, and that narrative has changed through time. At times, the Park Service has very much tried to shape that narrative, as it did in describing Yellowstone as the first ever expression of the national park idea back in the 1920s. And at times, that narrative has been very much imposed on the Park Service, as during the fires, when the public at large saw the destruction of the park, when in fact it was more of a renewal of the park. So yes, the Park Service does play a role. I think the society as a whole plays a role. Sometimes the Park Service is shaping, sometimes it's responding. But what I was hoping to do was to show some of those narratives and how they've changed over the years.
I will admit that last night I quickly Googled Yellowstone Park, and I just wanted to see what kind of things were in the news over the past, say, year. And what fascinated me is that the great majority of the stories that come from Yellowstone and go out to the rest of the world seem to be, and I'm kind of paraphrasing this, but seem to be people being stupid at the park. Right? I mean, like walking up to a bear, trying to like drag race a bison. It's a strange thing, but those seem to be the stories that are coming out of the park right now.
And I think it's interesting that, we have these stories of how stupid other people are at the same time that we have a political climate in which both sides believe the other side is incredibly stupid and incredibly misguided. I look forward to the day when we can be celebrating Yellowstone and the way it brings us together, because I think that'll be a signal that our general society is celebrating the ways that we are similar rather than cursing the ways we are different.
How do you think it can bring us together? How do you see that working itself out?
I think natural phenomena have a great ability to bring people together, and a great example was the eclipse. I went down to Casper, Wyoming to experience the full totality, and there were people all around me who were just awed and impressed, and it was such a happy, happy day. Some of the worst traffic jams in Wyoming history, and nobody was angry about it because we had all shared this unique moment. And I think Yellowstone has a similar power. As the Old Faithful geyser explodes out of the ground, everybody oohs and ahs, and nobody is criticizing the way it's managed. They feel this solidarity as humans in the face of natural wonder, and they are joyed by that.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is Wonder Landscape, and it's published by Pegasus Books. The subtitle, Yellowstone National Park and the Evolution of an American Cultural Icon. John Clayton, thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Well, thanks, Joe. It was a delightful conversation.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Wonder Landscape, Yellowstone National Park and the Evolution of an American Cultural Icon by John Clayton and published by Pegasus Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.